Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Welcome, folks, and this is Dr. Joanne White, and I'm really excited about the guests that I have today because they're going to fire you up in some wonderful spiritual and on-track directions with everything about your life and about you. And how many of us are always looking for an inner compass? And I'm not talking about finding a direction to get to a place or looking on a map. I'm talking about finding our own direction and aligning ourselves with really what we're here to do and what our soul and our spirit are moving us towards. And many of us come in with that understanding, and many of us lose that. And my first guest is really going to help us make sense of a lot of this wonderful, I don't think it's a puzzle, but for some of us it's a puzzle, so we're going to get a lot of clarity today. Mary Angela is a psychic medium, mystic, ritual, and ceremonial facilitator. She's an author, and she has a wonderful book that we're going to talk about, poet, founder, and co-director of the Center for True North. The Center for True North. Her book, Spiritual Adulthood, Gateway to Freedom, I just love that title, is something that really is going to open you folks up. So I'm going to encourage you right from the get-go to really find out more about how to get a hold of her and her books and all that she does. She has Soul Fire Spirit Sessions. She has a live journey workshop, which we're going to find out about, CDs that, again, are going to help you connect to the core of who you are. And without further ado, Mary Angela, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's certainly my pleasure. And first thing I want to ask you is, when we first talked, and I talked to Hank, we talked about the Center for True North, and that's, you're a co-director and founder of that. So how did you come about with that title? Because it's really savvy and right on with where we are right now in the world.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I love the title, too. I actually discovered that True North is it's the geographic northernmost point on the planet. So that point, it's not the same as north on a conventional compass. The compass north is aligned with the magnetic north pole. But this geographic True North, which really captivated me, is actually the top of the world. And so a lot of explorers say that the closer you are to this top of the world, True North, the less accurate a magnetic north compass reading becomes. So in order to reach the top of the world, True North, you have to have sensitively tuned and really responsive tools. So we got very magnetically drawn to this name, and for us, True North is a path of personal discovery in which each of us directs our lives in accordance with an authentic inner compass. So all of our programs, services, and products are designed to tune our clients or participants' authentic inner compass so they can reach their individual top of the world True North and live the life they dream of, so the life that they're destined to live. And you know, you mentioned it in the introduction. To me, destiny is not about fate. It's not about something that's predetermined. It's about the journey. You know, when we look at it etymologically, the word destiny has to do with the unfolding of the journey or the unfolding of the path.
You know, I love that because we're in such a magnificent time in terms of unfoldment for many, many people, and there's also a lot of confusion about what's going on and where we're going. So I think this work that you're doing, that so many of us are doing, is so very, very important. And oftentimes people are very confused. They don't know what their direction is. They don't know why they're here. So you have a way, and I want to talk a little bit about that way of really moving people forward in the direction. You talk about that a veil, and you and I are familiar with what that veil means, but can you describe that a little bit to our listening audience, and also how we as individuals can begin to remove the veil? Because I think it's so important that when that gets removed, we can be and see ourselves, our true selves, like you're talking about, our authentic selves, so much more clearly. That was a large question. Sorry about
that. Well, I think the veil, you know, is something that my strong sense is that as we continue to evolve, as we go along this paradigm shift, and those who are perhaps born to our children or our children's children won't be born with the veil. But that's where we're headed in evolution, so that there we won't pass through what many mythopoetic stories talk about as the river of forgetfulness. And so one of the myths that I love, and I actually tell this myth when I do the Taking the Alive Journey presentation, is of the three sisters of fate. And again, that fate is not something that's predetermined. It has to do with our soul. It has to do with the weave, with the threads that are part of the weave of the fabric of the soul that tell us, and I call it the soul map or the soul blueprint, and that soul map tells us what our gifts are and how we are meant to give our gifts to the world. So it really defines or describes our purpose. And so in this myth, what it says is that the first sister, so we could say it's a spirit guide or a guardian, part of our council, the first member pulls the thread, the main thread of our soul weave. The second sister weaves it into the fabric of our soul, and the third sister gives it a twist. And the twist is our individuality, our unique way of doing it, our signature, or, you know, our unique voice. Because we could say, or someone could argue, well, there are hundreds of thousands or, you know, millions of artists. Yes, but each one of us, let's say, you know, if I'm doing a soul fire spirit session for an artist, and says, well, you know, there are so many painters. What's the difference? Why should I bother? Well, because here's the answer. Here's one of the answers. Because the twist in that thread, no one else has that twist. It's like your fingerprint. No one else has that particular twist. So you could, in fact, paint the same beautiful rock formation that I can see out my window, and it will not look the same as the next person. It'll have a different lens and a different interpretation. Now, the myth continues on with, we know it, we remember it. This is prior to incarnation. You know, this is why we're looking down into our, you know, the various probability lines of the life we're about to dive into. And we know it. We remember it. We know why we're here. We're in touch with our records, you know, previous lives and all of the gifts that we have accumulated, all the things that we've learned over time. And then we forget. There are even just to say that we have a guardian angel that bonks us in the head and causes us to forget. And so our life then becomes a process of remembering. And what I love about the word remember is, again, and I love etymology, is that it's the opposite of dismember. So it's to remember is to put back together that which has been dismembered, to reclaim what it was that we came in here encoded to do. And so, you know, that was something that fascinated me so much. You know, even as a young kid, I was raised Catholic, you know, and so, you know, I used to ask the nuns, what am I here for? They would just look at me and, you know, sort of recite a catechism lesson or something. You know, you're here to serve God, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But I was asking something, you know, it's not in my first spiritual crisis at like 7, because I wanted to know why, but I understand I'm here to serve God and all of that, you know, so I sort of tried to appease them, but I was asking from this really deep place, but what is my, what's my thing to do? What is it that I'm here to do? How am I going to have a sense of participating and contributing so that, you know, I'll have this feeling of fulfillment? Because I was also around my a lot of death as a young child, and, you know, grandparents and so forth, and aunts and uncles dying. And the things that, I can't say really that it frightened me, Joanne, but it concerned me that that some of them were having this feeling of, I don't know if I did what I came here to do. Even though they weren't using that language, they were saying that. That was emanating from them, and I thought, holy cow, that's, well, I don't want to be there. You know, I don't want to be on my deathbed asking that question or having that wondering. So it really thrust me into it. And I think I annoyed some of the people around me when I was younger asking that question and, you know, getting answers like, well, you're here to get married and have children. And, you know, so I got the standard, the conventional response, except with the exception of my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, who was also incredibly psychic, and she said to me at one point, you are here to see what other people can't see and feel what other people can't feel and then help them to see it and feel it. So I love that.
She knew that. I love that, too, because she knew that because she also was able to see and move past her veil. She knew that about you so very early on. And so in a way, I think you were so fortunate to have her because, yeah, everybody's going to give you the standard answers. Hopefully today when the other generations grow up, they'll know that. And if they ask that, they won't get that kind of answer anymore because we're in a totally different time. I want to shift a little bit because, you know, you and I can talk about this for like hours and hours, but I want to get as much in as possible. And you talk about, and again, this is something that you and I are familiar with, but I want to make sure that our listening audience gets it. You talk about spiritual alchemy. And that's so much a part of a lot of the work that you do with people in terms of shifting. It's so much a part of your book from what I've been able to glean from it. So can you kind of very briefly define it? Because then I want to move into this wonderful book that you have.
Well, if we think about alchemy, just the definition of it, we're taking something that's base metal and turning it into gold. And for me, spiritual alchemy has a lot about converting the things that we might consider to be dross in our lives, you know, this sort of numbing repetition of daily life or that sense of meaninglessness, that sense of emptiness that we have, taking that and really grabbing a hold of that because, you know, sometimes we get in touch with our hunger for what it is we came here to do from our symptoms, from our depression or our emptiness. You know, some people get it from, you know, they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, I have a sense, I feel a little inspired in this direction, or I have this dream, or I watch this other person and I envy them, which is another way of getting to it. Because usually we envy people that have similar gifts. It's just that they're manifesting them. They're expressing them, and we're not. So we find ourselves envying them. So I just say to people, if you're in a place of envy or you're in a place of, you know, feeling really, really lost, that's a good place to start. And to go from there and to allow that dross, if you will, to become an alchemical process, because if we stay with it, if we follow it, if we grab a hold of that thread, whatever that thread is, and rather than push away from it, you know, medicate away from it, and, you know, and I'm not disparaging anybody that needs to be on medication, but I'm using that really more as a metaphor, you know, pushing away from it. If we grab a hold of it, then I think magical things happen. You know, people say to me, oh, this is a miracle, and I feel like, no, that's just a natural unfolding of what is possible in life when we sit with what is, we grab a hold of it, and we allow alchemy to happen. We allow things it to take us somewhere or things to be revealed. And I think it's a splendid, you know, it helps me to get up in the morning. I say, I wonder what's going to happen today. What alchemical process is going to take me this day?
You know, I think that's so very important because there are so many people now who are searching, really searching, and yet there's so much fear about following a particular destiny or path that they're getting, like you're talking about, glimpses of or feelings about or whatever, and this is really a way to help them align with that. Now, how do you know? How do you know, as somebody who facilitates and works with people one-on-one and in group sessions, how do you know how to move people through that journey of transformation and getting in touch with their true north, with moving beyond their veil so that they could see what they're here for?
Well, there are several ways that I do that. One of them is through one-on-one Soul Fire Spirit sessions, which I really consider as empowering readings. You know, it's not just that the client is coming to me to tell them about themselves, but we're going to go on a journey together. It's all really the alive journey is kind of an umbrella for under which all of the offerings that we have as part of True North sit. So one of the ways is through those sessions that really brings an insight and a clarity to the client's life by igniting their soul fire, because our souls are really dynamic and encoded, you know, and I don't know how I can read those blueprints. I just know that I can, and so that as part of the process in the one-on-one session, you know, it's interesting because the soul takes the shape for me when I'm in session with someone. I keep my eyes closed the entire time so that I'm really navigating a kind of inner landscape. And it takes the shape of a beautiful disc. And on the outer part of the disc are these little bubbles of information. It's encoded information. It's like a map. And those things will begin to go off. They'll begin to get catalyzed, and there's information encoded in it. So really we're going on kind of a vision quest journey to discover what was it, as those threads were being pulled and woven, what was it that this particular individual was in touch with before the veil descended or before going through that river of forgetfulness. And then, you know, there'll be all kinds of images that'll come up, and that map will get revealed to both of us, really, you know, in the process of the session. And most of the time, people will say things like, oh, my gosh, you know, that is something I feel I would love to do, or something I started to do, or something I'm afraid to do, but I do feel like I have that gift.
Once they have those sessions with you and they recognize that and they get a sense of that blueprint and what they're here to do, do you know whether or not they follow it? Do they come back for more sessions? Are they just awakened? And then how does that work afterwards? Because oftentimes when I'm working one-on-one with people, they get that information, and some people go with it and it blossoms into some unbelievable, miraculous living experiences, and others, they're not quite ready.
Yeah, I encounter that too. Yeah, sometimes people come back for additional sessions. What I typically do is, you know, I'm happy to do more than one session, of course, but what I typically do if I find that someone is really experiencing a lot of you know, what I just call stuckness, you know, this sense of, wow, I hear you, I get it, I would really love to do that, and I cannot move forward, and I don't know why I can't move forward, is that I encourage them to participate in at least level one of the Alive Journey workshops. There are actually three levels, and so at least level one, but generally speaking, after people do level one, they really want level two as well, because there's what happens in these workshops, and I'll just say this briefly, is that people go deeper. It really escorts them to a deeper center of their soulful, authentic self. So that, and they begin to experience a lot of clarity that that perhaps they don't get in the Soul Fire Spirit sessions, and they encounter the difference between their programmed or programmatic self and their authentic self. So we go in there, we go much, much deeper identifying a person's unmet needs, their emotional the emotional barter or contract that they constructed with their parents when they came in, the labels that were assigned to them, the imprints. And as those things are discovered, they can be dissolved because, you know, all of those things contribute to our program self. And part of that level one also is a reclamation and a proclamation of our genuine I am. Who are you really underneath all of the conditioning, all of the things that have been kind of overlaid? And so that generally really helps people to get a sense of, okay, hold on a second, I get it. I get who I am underneath all of that. And then level two helps them to understand how to then go be that in the world. That's called, the first level is called remembering your authentic self, and the second one is being your authentic self. And so
not only is it important to remember, obviously, but they have to, and that you do that in level two, they have to be able to really put that into action, into their lives, so that they're living that experience, and it's an alive, I'm going to use that, it's an alive journey, which means it's present and it's functional and it's focused within their lives. You know, you have this book, and when I first received the information about this book, I thought, what a fantastic title, because I think that's where we are on the planet right now, moving into our spiritual adulthood, understanding what that's about, growing up in a sense that we can embrace that so much more, many of us, so much more willingly and openly. And I was just smiling and thinking, what a great title. So tell us about the book, because you have workshops and CDs that go with it, and it really is a gateway to freedom when you wake up to everything that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I love the title too. It really celebrates. So to do it in sort of little sound bites, spiritual adulthood really celebrates our co-creatorship. Bottom line, it's a call to action. It's really okay. It's time to stand up and cross the threshold from spiritual adolescence to spiritual adulthood. And in spiritual adolescence, you know, we come from, or we have come from, this place of I'm going to let go and let God, and Mother, Father, God has all of the answers and is taking care of everything. And, you know, so one of the things I say in the workshop or in the presentations that I give is, I want you to imagine I got up one morning and I dialed up the source and I said, so how are you doing with that? And the source said, I'm tired of it. I actually would like you to understand that you're in partnership with me. You are in partnership as a reality-creating participant. So it's time for you to not only have that consciousness, but to behave in that way and sort of stop. You know, it's kind of like it's time to move out of the house. You know, something maybe we encounter in our late teens or early 20s. It's time to move out now and stand on our own two feet. And so in the book, I feel that the book Spiritual Adulthood gives us a map to reconnect with our true identity as divine beings, as co-creative beings. And it also directs us to the place of embracing, acknowledging and embracing our significant place in the cosmos. And so we go through this reclaiming our essence. I have four spiritual adulthood pass keys that hopefully people will choose to implement into their daily lives, not just to read about, but to implement. And then, and all of these things help us to take extraordinary steps in the direction of dismantling this historical paradigm, you know, so that and I love this, so that we actually be the change, quoting Gandhi here, we be the change we want to see in the world. And that's another, I think, sort of simplistic way of talking about spiritual adulthood.
And you know something that's so important? Could you imagine, and I think about this a lot, a world, a planet, where everyone acknowledges and recognizes and lives their divinity? Because it would be such a different place, and I'm holding that the energy for that because I really believe that's very, very possible, and I think it's great. How can people, and you have also these CDs, Journey into the Cosmic Card, Experiencing Your Cosmic Identity, all of these that go along with kind of this awakening and aliveness in terms of living that soul journey, manifesting it within our human body. Tell us how people can get a hold of you, get in touch with some of what you do. I noticed that on your website you also have some free products, some articles for people to read to get more in depth and to access this book and everything that you do.
Thank you. Well, they can go to our website, which is www.thecenterfortruenorth, just like it sounds, thecenterfortruenorth.com. And once they're on there, I think the website's pretty simple to navigate. They can, you know, just kind of go through the entire thing and they'll see all of the different offerings we have. If they join our mailing list, then they get a free download of the first Meditative Journey CD that I authored and recorded, which is all about the cosmic heart, which really connects us with, you know, with our heart and helps us to remain heart-centered rather than mind-centered, you know, or ego-centered.
Right.
And that's also a gateway, the heart, a gateway to the soul. So I think that's one of the best things people can do is join the mailing list, because then they're kind of kept, abreast of all of the different things we're offering, either webinars or if I'm coming to their city to do a presentation or a workshop, and, you know, and it'll also help them to understand how to purchase the book and get, like you said, how to read the free articles. They can also call us at area code 435-680-1668. And the Soulfire Spirit sessions, by the way, are 95% of them I do telephonically. So sometimes people ask that. They say, "Why? I'm not in your area. How can I do a session?" And 95% of them are done telephonically.
Well, that's great, because then you can access people like I do all over the country and actually all over the world, which is wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's next for you? You and I were emailing a little bit, and I was emailing with Hank, the co-founder of True North. What's next for you? We have about a minute or so, and I want to capture all the good stuff that you're involved in and the next steps for you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, we're going to be doing taking the Alive Journey presentation. So we're going actually to the Park City area of Utah. For anybody that's listening that is in that area, it's the northern part of Utah, and we'll be up there on 11/11/11 and also 11/13. So on the Friday and the Sunday in the evening, you can access all this information on our website. That'll be a presentation, a two-hour presentation where, you know, people can come to be inspired, to discover real meaning, to dance with their soul purpose and claim their destiny. It's a wonderful overview, and I'll also be doing a book signing. And I'm going to be doing these, taking the Alive Journey presentations throughout all 2012 at various locations around the country, and also doing them online. So as people join the mailing list, then they'll also get updates about when I'm going to be doing them in webinar fashion. And that's really exciting to me because it's a venue for me to talk about all aspects of this work. And this, the Taking the Alive Journey presentation stands on its own, but again, it's also an overview to some of the other things that people might want to do to continue the Alive Journey.
Well, you've been wonderful. I love the work that you're doing. We are, like I said when I introduced you, we are like-minded in so many ways. I wish you the greatest success, and definitely keep me posted, particularly when you're in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, because we'll bring people out to celebrate our aliveness and our connection to our soul.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Have a blessed day.
You too.
And folks, how many of us have looked at each moment? How many of us have tried to figure out what's going on in our lives, and yet we're so bogged down by the past and we're so bogged down by worry that we really forget to to live that moment-by-moment experience, and we really forget or lose sight of the wonder and the power that each moment brings. And so today, we're going to have somebody who really is going to help us see the importance of it and give us ways to really access that information and transform our lives, really 1 minute, 1 second at a time. And Donald Altman is a psychotherapist and an author of The Mindfulness Code, Meal by Meal, and his newest book, 1 Minute Mindfulness, offers 50 simple ways. We're not going to do 50 today. It would be great. We need a few hours for that. 50 simple ways to transform your life 60 seconds at a time. And we have 60 seconds. We can do that in 60 seconds if we know how. Donald is known as the mindfulness coach, and he conducts mindful living and mindful eating workshops and retreats all over the country. And his book, 1 Minute Mindfulness, is really wonderful, and I've looked at it, and it has so much really very important information that's so easy to read and to access. And the beauty of it is that there are activities, exercises that you can really go through and experience and live 1 minute at a time. Donald, are you there?
Yes, yes I am. Hi, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here today and to talk about how to make this next minute really count.
You know, I think it's so important because we, as I said earlier, we lose sight of that. And you have a, I'm going to just delve right into the book, if you don't mind, and right into some of, you have some beautiful prayers in the book, especially the prayers on peace from many different sources. Mm. And there's a practice in the book that's called Be the Pebble. And I just love that. And I would like if you could share that with others, with our listening audience.
That would be great. Thank you. The Be the Pebble practice, as I call it, is a way in 1 minute to get centered and to calm yourself. If you notice that your mind is spinning, and you can, you know, the Be the Pebble is kind of a metaphor for, you know, if you have turbulent thoughts and you can imagine a river of water with a lot of waves, white water, you can't even see through to the bottom, right? And that can be
right.
What our thoughts can be like. We can be have a torrent of thoughts that can block out this present moment. And so the idea of being the pebble is to use a word which acts as a pebble that drops you below the surface of that raging water, and so you can rest down at the bottom where it's still and quiet, and you can find some calm there. And you're not really, you're just being a pebble sitting at the bottom on a riverbed down there. It's not doing anything, is it? It just has a pebble's eye view of everything, and it's at peace. So what I want to suggest is to choose a word. I want all your listeners to think of a word that you could use to act as a pebble for you. Some people like the word pebble because it doesn't have any other associations usually. So I want you to choose a word that doesn't really lead you into having a lot, you know, stimulating a lot of other memories and thoughts, but a kind of a neutral word. Maybe some other suggestions are the word one or peace, or at rest, or whatever you want to have. Some people have a color they like, and they'll choose that color as their word, as their pebble. So now, once you have the word, then you're going to find a place where you can, and you could do this really anywhere, but if you have a nice little quiet place to sit or to stand even, and just be with that word. And you're not forcing it. You're not pushing the word, but you're just having it come to you in a very easy, effortless way, and that's the way that in this next minute we can live our lives. It's accessible to us in that way. And so you think of this word. Now imagine a pebble. Also, you may have thoughts that come into your mind while you're thinking of the word, and that's okay. You can imagine that as a thought as being a fish that's swimming by, right? And that could be a beautiful fish that makes you feel, oh, it's so wonderful. Look at the colors on that fish. And you may have a bliss feeling as you're doing this. But you can let that go, too, and just come back to the word, not to hold on to whatever's happening. You may have a dangerous fish swim by, like a shark, right? A thought that is maybe discomforting or upsetting. And then, again, you can just that will swim by, dissipate, and just return to your centering, your calming word. And you can do this for just 30 seconds or a minute, and you will notice that it will quiet your mind down. It will give you a sense of calm and peace wherever you happen to be. I think it's a wonderful practice, and I'm glad you mentioned that one.
Well, I've used it, so I love it. And it basically, what you're talking about is that word could be a mantra, just something that doesn't have any kind of emotional attachment that takes you in another direction. And I love the idea of other fishes swimming by, because people keep thinking, well, you know, how do I stop my thoughts? How do I stop my thoughts? But if you're just allowing them to swim by, like these other fish that you've been describing, without attaching yourself to a fish, so you're not swimming along with them, but you're still that pebble or whatever, then that's a great way to do that. Now, you know what we didn't do, and we probably should. You and I are familiar with mindfulness, but many of our listeners are thinking, well, what is that? So let's go back a little bit and do that little mini intro. What is mindfulness?
Oh, okay.
I skipped a step.
Mindfulness, you know, I say that mindfulness is really the possibility of awakening and the awakening of possibility. It is a way of being present in this moment in a very fresh and curious way, so that you're really opening to whatever is happening, and you're letting go of other mindsets around people and things, so that you can experience things in this new and novel way right now. So it is about being open-hearted and accepting of this moment. And I think there are a lot of different ways to describe it, but it really is about allowing ourselves to be devoted 100% to the experience we're having right now.
You know, it's so important, because this moment, like you're talking and describing so aptly and beautifully, is never going to come around again. This is it. So why not embellish the moment with as much beauty and aliveness and awareness as we possibly can?
That's a wonderful way of saying it. I really believe that the most important time in our lives is this next 60 seconds. And if you're missing out on it, you're really missing out on the big view, on the joy that is here. So, you know, happiness is not about that thing that you're going to possess, but it's about how you experience this moment. And you can find joy in this moment. I mean, even if difficult things happen to you in your life, you can still find a way of even experiencing that as something that is meaningful for you. You know, I have a chapter in the book called "Pray for What You Already Have," there are two ways to experience anything. You can experience this moment, and you can hate it. You can reject it. You can say, "I wish this wasn't here," and then you're expending a tremendous amount of energy trying to push away what is already there. Or you can experience it and look at what is available to you through that experience. You know, how you respond to that experience can be very powerful. You don't have to let any experience, even if it's a negative experience, take away your power. And
so it's really
by
about
allowing...
Go ahead.
No. So it's really about empowering yourself by accepting whatever is there and choosing how you want to respond and deal with it.
So choice and response and acceptance are so very important. And, you know, a lot of people, Donald, say, well, prayer is not about that. And this has come up in the last 2 weeks with my guest last week and also at a couple of seminars and with people, in terms of, well, what is prayer? And this is a really wonderful way of looking at prayer, not just asking for what we want, not just saying, oh, God, or higher power, or great spirit, give us. But this is a way of acknowledging whatever it is in our life at the moment. And it's all. And I think what that does, both internally and also in terms of, I do a lot of energy work, also in terms of what we're sending out into the world, is a message, a very profound energetic message of everything that you're talking about, of being in sync with the moment and with ourselves and appreciating all of it.
Mm-hmm. I think one minute mindfulness is really the power of now with attitude. And I say that because in terms of what you're saying, you know, prayer, which often people think of as petitionary, you know, I'm going to petition for, I want this, I want that. But what we're saying with choice, with 1 minute mindfulness, is that it's intentionality as well. It's living with your purpose. It's leading with your intention to have a better relationship, to make a difference in the world. And that intention connects us with others, and there, it's a two-way connection. The one thing that's often missed in mindfulness that I really tried to bring into the 1 minute mindfulness book is the idea that mindfulness is not just about my moment-to-moment experience, but it's how we share this moment. And I have a whole section, in fact, on relationships and love and how to use mindfulness to create the kind of love and relationship that you want in your life.
So when you do that for love and relationships, is that, and you're talking about sharing, is that something that two people do together? Or are they doing it separately and then coming together? How does that work, Donald?
If you do it together, that's great. And in fact, there's actually some research that shows that even couples that already have good relationships, if they both practice mindfulness together in their relationship, it strengthens the relationship. But I think it only really takes one person, because if one person listens to another in an open and accepting way, that's going to change the relationship, and that's going to make that other person be validated. One of the chapters that I have is about how do we listen to another, and that how important a gift that is to when we're connecting with another person, to open and really just allow yourself to be present to their story and not to try to interrupt it or change it or interpret it in any other different way than just to be there, and also to ask questions so that you could clarify and you could actually help somebody make better sense of their story. And through this process, there's a mutual sense of understanding and a deepening of the connection there and the deepening of the trust. And
you know, you're
that's
so right
vital nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah. You're so right with that, and it is so vital, as you're saying, because people want to know that they're being heard, that they're being accepted in any kind of communication, and
mm-hmm.
listening is a great way of going about that. You have something that's called, and I love this too, Playtime for the Soul. Can you tell us what that's about? It makes me laugh the minute I hear it, so it's good because I'm already getting into that play mode. But can you share that with our listening audience?
Yeah. Well, Playtime for the Soul is the idea that, is that anything we do can be done with an attitude of playfulness and joyfulness. And often we kind of separate things. Well, work is work, play is play, right? So how can we bring these two together and actually allow ourselves to be playful while we're doing anything? And and that doesn't mean that we're going to be childish, but it means bringing a childlike sense of curiosity to whatever we're doing. And imagine if whatever you were doing, you had that childlike sense of curiosity again, what would that be like for you? And so for example, I had somebody who read, it was my previous book, The Mindfulness Code, and I got a letter from them saying that they started skipping around the office one day, and everybody started skipping, and nobody got fired, but it raised their energy. They had fun. We're going to have fun together here. You know, how could you share something that is uplifting and maybe can bring a smile to somebody at your workplace, right? How can you look at what you're doing in a way, no matter what it is, in a way that you can look at things and really look for the little details in what you're doing and experience them? You know, there was an interesting study that showed that people's minds wander about 48% of the time. Now, this is really interesting. The study also showed that when their minds wandered, they were less happy. So the joyfulness or the happiness came when it wasn't about the activity they were doing, but it was how present they were with it. And I think that by bringing in a sense of curiosity and a sense of playfulness into any activity, especially work, can help us. You know, if you're in a customer service field, for example, I know that that can be very challenging and stressful, but it could also be very wonderful with imagining each person you're meeting as if that here is somebody with something to teach you, something to show you. And so, I think we need to think about our attitude and bring in, you know, you've heard this phrase probably, an attitude of gratitude, but an attitude of playful gratitude to whatever we're doing.
You know, I think that also opens up, I think playfulness and an attitude also open up the doors if you're in a work situation or even in a relationship, the doors for creativity, so to be more creative in whatever it is you're doing. You have a quote that I love, and I just wanted to share this with our listeners, and maybe you can expound upon it a little bit.
Yeah.
You say, "Awakening to this moment is an art, which you will express in a personal way. However you decide to shape your life, as you sculpt your attention and awareness, it's my hope that 1 minute mindfulness will give you the power and the fulfilling options to do so." But, and it goes on, so I don't want to read it all. But the idea that awakening to this moment is an art reminds me of something I just wanted to share with you. Because when I was in an apartment years ago, there was a neighbor of mine, and I used to just watch everything that she did, and I used to describe that she lived her life as an art. Just the way her approach to washing the dishes, to setting a table, to entertaining guests, to opening her door, and I used to marvel at that, and it really taught me so much by just looking at that and seeing how she embraced that. And so when I came across this quote, I thought, yes, this is incredible. So I hope I didn't give it all away, but can you expound upon that a little bit? Because it excited me.
Yeah. I think that how we live this next minute really is an art. And first you have to understand that what 1 minute mindfulness allows you to do is to become more aware of things. You can't really change anything until you first become aware of it. And then when you become aware, you're making decisions in the next minute about how do I want to answer that door, right? Do I want to commit myself to turning on the TV for 3 hours every night? I think that what you're doing, you're making a commitment to that. And so do you want to commit to watching that TV? Do you want to commit to any action that you're doing? And so how you make that choice in the next minute is very important. And so what you're describing in that lady is somebody who decided she was going to enter that next minute with a sense of ease, a sense of grace, a sense of joy and wonderment. And so how we do that actually ends up, this is the really cool thing, ends up sculpting your brain. How you use your attention, and that's what 1 minute mindfulness is really about at the core, is focusing the power of your attention and then letting that change you from the inside out. This is really incredible. I mean, we know this from neuroscience now, that how you use your attention sculpts your brain. And
you know,
there are a lot
that,
of
that,
things vying.
That's so
it's very,
very
profound. And there are a lot of things vying for your attention. And how do you decide which you want and which you don't want? And this is how we make the changes in our life. This is how we get unstuck. And that's a beautiful but powerful, and I say empowering thing, to be able to have your focused attention and using it the way you would like to.
You know, I love it because I love the word choice, because I believe that, and I think you're right. Every moment, every second is a choice. And if people, some people say, well, and you also have exercises about this in your book. They say, well, there's nothing I control. The government controls this. the weather controls something else. And yet in your book, and certainly when we're talking about choice, there are so many things, if we ponder or contemplate that for a minute, that we do have choice and control over that we just sometimes forget. You have.
We really do. And I think one-minute mindfulness is really a tool to help people regain that choice in the next minute. And it doesn't have to be some great, huge thing that you're going to change in your life. But we make these changes moment to moment. And that's how you alter the course, right?
Right.
Your car doesn't turn from going straight to turning right all of, like, in a split second. You're turning the wheel, right? And that's how you know, here you are, steering your attention. And it's a skill, and it's an art. And it's very hopeful for people when they start to use this and say, wow, I can do this in a minute. And it's exciting for them. It's exciting to see that. And that's where I get joy from, is witnessing that.
Well, you know, so something too, it works in, people are so busy, and I hear often, oh, but I don't have time. I don't have time to meditate. I don't have time to do this. And I even sometimes find myself being guilty of that at the same time. But here you are, you've come up with this 1 minute mindfulness, and no one, I don't believe anyone can say, you know what, I don't have a minute. I can't focus my attention and do what I need to do for this minute. So with your book,
yeah,
you sort of minimize the excuses that people have about there isn't enough time, which is brilliant. It's really brilliant. I want to move to the peace prayers, because I'm a strong component of that, and I think it's so important. And so the question that I want to put to you is, why, and this is more for the listening audience, because I believe this so implicitly, why are these peace prayers so important, especially today? And then we'll delve into them.
Yeah, and I want to mention this. I saved this for the last chapter of the book, and because I wanted people, if you're going to get one thing to carry away with them from reading it, was this idea that we can send out messages of peace, and we can change the world, and we need to start it from within. These peace prayers are actually taken from the prayers that Gandhi used when he was in an ashram, and his ashram in India actually took peace prayers from many, many different traditions, and very, very diverse ones, and I include several of them here. And I think the idea that we can create a more peaceful life means that we need to set that intention. And these can act as mantras that anyone can kind of get centered with. And they all have a very, very different direction. Is it okay if I read two or three of these?
I was actually going to ask you to, so that's wonderful. Please do, yes.
Oh, great. So here's a Baha'i peace prayer. Be generous in prosperity and thankful in adversity. Be fair in thy judgment and guarded in thy speech. Here's a Native American peace prayer. Give us the wisdom to teach our children to love, to respect, and to be kind to one another, so that they may grow with peace of mind. Here from the Bible, Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be known as the children of God. I like this Shinto peace prayer. It says, I earnestly wish that the wind will soon blow away all the clouds hanging over the tops of the mountains. Think about that. So there would reveal the sun. Of course, the sun, if you can get above the clouds, the sun is always shining, isn't it? And I'd like to close with this Zoroastrian peace prayer. Let understanding triumph over ignorance. Let generosity triumph over indifference. Trust triumph over contempt, and truth over falsehood. So I
they're
think
so
that any
simple
of these.
Yeah,
and they
so
these,
for,
these
but they're
prime
so
our mind.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do people use these because I think that this is very important, and I agree with you. I think it's important today, and if people can walk away with this, I think that that we've done our work today somewhat. So
yeah,
how can
I would
people
write
use
them,
this?
I would, what I would do is I would write them down, write two or three of your favorite peace prayers down on a an index card and carry it with you. And when you need it, bring it out and let yourself steep your being in these beautiful messages of peace and allow that to be with you throughout the day. And then see if that doesn't set the change how you can interact in the moment.
And you know what? I
just
think they can even make their own prayers up too. That would be just as powerful.
Oh, absolutely. And I would encourage that. I think that's always good, is to create your own prayers of peace. And of course, another really wonderful one is the loving kindness meditation. May I be well, happy and at peace, free from pain, hunger and suffering, and may all beings be well, happy and at peace, free from pain, hunger and suffering. Because we all really want the same thing. We want to be appreciated and loved. And this is an understanding of the universality and the universal need for peace and love.
And it's so very important. Now, your book, 1 Minute Mindfulness, covers work and creativity, love and relationships, like we've been talking about, nature
mm-hmm.
and spirituality. A lot of people are experiencing some health challenges and just challenges in their well-being, and I think that's part of the shift that we're going through. So can you talk about how people can use this 1 minute mindfulness for that?
Sure. I do have a whole section here on health and well-being and another section on nature, spirituality, and contemplation, and I think that those are in particular are areas where we can come back into greater balance. I talk about breathing in the book and how to get, you know, let your diaphragmatic breathing deeper into the lungs, actually changes the stress system response, and it brings your body and your brain into a sense of repose and a sense of relaxation. You know, another thing is connecting with nature. Connecting, you know, when people are working throughout the day, the brain is actually getting depleted of energy, and I talk about this in the book, and how looking at nature actually recharges and replenishes and renews that energy. It's really a beautiful thing. And so I would suggest, if you don't have a window where you're working, bring in some plants, bring in one plant, and just be able to look at that plant. Take breaks and go outside. Look at the green. You know, there are thousands of shades of green, and you can really enjoy them. I have a practice that I talk about of gazing out at the sky. And it's a beautiful practice of giving all your worries, giving all the things that may be concerning you, and giving it up to something bigger, more wise than yourself. So those are a couple of the ways that anyone, I think, could use these practices to come into greater balance.
And we all need more balance. And as you and I both know, balance is really very important to health and well-being.
Hmm.
So, Donald, you and I can talk forever because this is something very near and dear to my heart, as this whole radio show has been today. Tell us how people can get a hold of your books, your everything that you have. You have more than just this book. You have several other books and all that you do.
Yeah, you know, I am the vice president of the Center for Mindful Eating, and I've written several books on mindful eating and how to change your relationship to food. That is on my mindfulpractices.com website, if somebody wanted to go there. And then I have the 1MinuteMindfulnessBook.com website, and you know, you can find out more about 1 Minute Mindfulness on that website. You can go to Amazon, or Barnes & Noble online. They're carrying the book. Even I believe Barnes & Noble bookstores have it in stock. So And then, you know, if you sign up for my newsletter, which is on the mindfulpractices.com site and on the 1 Minute Mindfulness Book site, you will get a free download of a guided sleep imagery. That's another way we need to come into balance, isn't it, is through learning how to train our bodies to get into the natural rhythm of sleep. And so that you get that download when you sign up for the newsletter. And every month I come up with a mindfulness reflection and something in the news about mindfulness research, because I know people are interested in the science of mindfulness. So,
you know,
that's a very nice way to cut you off
only because I don't want them to cut us off. And since we have 10 seconds here.
Yeah.
Please check out Donald Altman. Please check out his books and his newsletter and everything he has to offer. Donald, like I said, we can be talking and talking. You are great. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, Joanne. Many blessings to you for the work you're doing and blessings to your audience.
Thanks to you, too. Have a great day. And, folks, thank you so much for sharing your day with us. We'll see you next week with two wonderful, savvy guests about business.
Been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting SivaToolbox.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.